What up, what up, everybody? This is Double G for the Fight Game podcast. I believe everybody will be listening to this at least on Thursday or later, so happy Thanksgiving to everybody. John LaRocca is on the road, or at least getting ready to go on the road to hang out with some family, and thus he cannot be here tonight, so I got a special guest co-host, somebody who does a podcast on the Fight Game Media Network called The Wrap, Keela Cash. What's going on, Keela?
Happy to be here once again. Glad to be back.
Yeah, this is the second time. Two-time John LaRocca co-host.
So yes.
That says something, because I don't think I've... Maybe Paul's been on in different versions, but not as a co-host more than once. So I think you're the first two-timer.
I'm honored, besides my cameo earlier this year for Clash of the Castle.
Right. Yeah, that you and Salty Scott were on. And yeah, I've been doing a little bit more of that, trying to bring, you know, instead of just talking about certain things with John, I go, I want to talk with somebody else who may have some interest or a different type of points or that they talk about on their show. So that was great. But yeah, so let's just dig in. Wednesday night, as we are recording this, I don't know about you for your day job, but it's been pretty light for me all week. So this almost feels like, I don't know, it feels like a Friday night to me. But so Dynamite was on, and I thought it was a pretty decent show. We'll get to that in a second, because Keela's expertise, at least for the Fight Game Media Network, is on WWE, and she does the weekly review, the recap of WWE. And we have Survivor Series coming up this weekend on Saturday. And I mentioned to Andrew Zarian on We're Live Pal that it's kind of cool because it's 2 days after Thanksgiving. And when I was growing up, Survivor Series was on Thanksgiving. That's how far back I go, to the very beginning and such. And so it's kind of a cool feeling, like, oh yeah, Thanksgiving, Black Friday, Survivor Series Saturday. So what do you... What is your, I would say, if you as a fan, like, what is the thing that you're looking forward to most for the Survivor Series card?
It's got to be the Bloodline and Brawling Brutes alongside Drew McIntyre and Kevin Owens. I think this is going to be the jump start to so many stories heading into the Warrior Rumble and WrestleMania.
Okay, what do you think is the finish here? Because I had an idea on We're Live Pal, and I'll repeat it again after, but where do they go? What's the possibility to end this match, and I'm going to guess that this is the main event, so to end the night as well, to head into, because this is our last show for the year, right? Last big show?
Yes, mm-hmm. Outside of NXT's Deadline.
Right, yeah, so and that's Apollo Crews and Baby Steiner. but yeah, what would you like to see as the finish? Because you just talked about those storylines and how they may start popping off here. What is the best finish in this match for you?
Honestly speaking, I have a feeling that Sami Uso is going to be pinned by his best friend. And I go back to SmackDown this past Friday, and Roman Reigns looked at Sami Zayn after losing to Butch, and it looked like he was about to kill him, in all honesty. So if he loses this match in Survivor Series, I think Sammy's going to have a very sad, miserable Christmas before it's all said and done. So I expect Sammy to get pinned, possibly by Kevin Owens.
That is amazing, because I can imagine, I don't know what WWE's SmackDown schedule is going to be come Christmas time, but you can imagine Roman giving out gifts and Sammy being so excited to get his, and it's like the worst one out of all of them. Like, that would be hilarious. Okay, so here's my thought. Now, I like that idea, and that is kind of how they usually do business. Like, that's, I think that is probably more likely to happen than what I'm thinking, but I want to see Roman pinned in this match, because they have Royal Rumble, and if we are going towards the direction of Kevin Owens versus Roman Reigns, I would love to see Kevin Owens pin Roman Reigns in this match because of a Sami Zayn screw-up. That would be I would really be excited if that's the way that it happened. And, you know, Roman never loses, so we never get to see that. And, I don't think anyone believes that Kevin Owens is going to win the title, but that would be kind of a fun way to get there for Royal Rumble if that is going to be the title match.
I think the earth would shake if Roman gets pinned for the first time in over 2 years.
Yep.
That's a great idea, because I've always said that Kevin Owens might be the only person outside of maybe Seth Rollins and Cody to beat Roman, because over the last couple of years, he was never pinned by Roman. It was always a ladder match, a steel cage, last man standing. So if he does pin Roman, it kind of comes full circle, gets another shot at the Warrior Rumble. He'll lose, but he can say, I pinned the champ by way of my best friend, Sami Zayn, who didn't mean to do it. Or knowing him, he could be a mole, and it could be very intentional.
Do you think we will see a Roman Reigns versus Sami Zayn match at any point during this run?
Ooh, he's really hot right now. I would say go with it. If he's getting these pops and he's getting this babyface perception, I would say go with it. Happenstance happens ever so often in WWE. He's a hot hand right now. I know they probably have a directive for WrestleMania involving someone big and splashy, but right now, every time there's a crowd, they want Sami Zayn. They want the Usy chance. They want him out there making them laugh and popping them. So I think that if WWE plays their cards right, just give the people what they want. Give Sami Roman Reigns some shape or form between now and WrestleMania.
Because you could do Kevin Owens and Roman at the Royal Rumble. And then just 3 weeks later, they're going to be in Montreal. And if Sami keeps screwing up, you know, we could get a Sami versus Roman match there. Or, you know, maybe they're all in a chamber. I don't like it when the champion's in the chamber, though. So let's like have just a title match and Sami Zayn and Roman Reigns in Montreal. I think that would be amazing. So, yeah, like you said, there's tons of ways that they can go. And I think that's what makes this upcoming show, at least for me, exciting, is just the fact that I think things are going to happen, because come January, that's when they really start getting heated up. And and some of the things, you know, there's no day one show this year. So we are really we're going to be in a holding pattern for like almost 2 months, I think. Right.
Yeah, unless they do some special shows for Raw and SmackDown, maybe bring back the wild card from 5 years ago for SmackDown. I don't know, but it's going to be quite the stretch of time for WWE to fill and see what they can do. But there are so many directions we can go with the Bloodline and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. You can do a tag team match with the Usos and KO and Sami in Montreal as well to pop that crowd. There's so many layers to the storyline that I like, because it can go in any direction, and that's what makes the storyline so good.
Move towards the women's War Games match. Now, I am of the opinion that you only need one, and I don't care which one it is. You could have the men's match be the War Games match, or the women's match be the War Games match. Have the other one be the old school traditional elimination style match. I think two War Games matches is too much, though. I think they'll be able to get away with it this year because it's fresh and it's new on WWE's PLE schedule. We've seen it in NXT. They've done two on NXT before. I thought it watered it down big time. But hopefully after this year, maybe they only do one, because I would have just done the old school elimination tag. And so you have both of those matches. You have a War Games match. You have a traditional Survivor Series match. And you could still make them meaningful. As long as we don't have brand versus brand, then we're all good. So what do you think about the how they're getting to this match with the women? You got Rhea added to one side. You have Mia Yim. Is she back to Mia Yim? Do we know what's going on here?
I have no idea. It changes day to day.
I actually like her nickname. I think her nickname is cool, but it's just weird when they keep bouncing back to back, back and forth. And what we believe, I think, is going to be Becky Lynch, right? I think that will be really exciting for that crowd on Saturday.
I would love to see it. The poor Albany crowd on Monday were very upset to know they would not get the surprise on that particular evening as to who the fifth woman would be. So I'm looking forward to Becky coming back if she is the fifth woman for this matchup. But I have to be honest in saying that I'm over the feud between Bianca Belair and Damage Control. It dates back to SummerSlam. And as you mentioned, War Games, maybe it's one too many. We can do the traditional tag team match here, but I still feel as if this feud has run on fumes for the last couple of months, and I can't find a reason to care emotionally. So I think the ladies have to overcompensate by doing crazy stuff in the ring, and I think War Games would be a way to do that to make me care a bit more, because right now I'm very so-so, and I go back to how the tag team champs were booked months ago with Io Sky and Dakota Kai. Like, if they won in Pittsburgh 3 months ago, I would care a bit more, but the booking definitely hampered them and their champs right now. But to me, they had an opening from the very beginning to crown them, and they backpedaled for whatever reason.
Yeah, like, I think if you did this as a traditional elimination match, I think I would have Rhea win to set up something between her and Bianca down the line, because Rhea's been so impressive. But we'll see. We'll see what they do. I imagine Rhea's still going to look great in this match. She's going to be the big bad on the heel side and stand taller than anybody on that side. But I don't know. You got Bianca, and if it is Becky Lynch, like, can you imagine come Friday on SmackDown if they announce Candice or Beth Phoenix? Like, it's going to be like that one Royal Rumble when Rey Mysterio was the 30th person and everyone wanted it to be Daniel Bryan, even though we had all had done the math while we were watching the show going like, oh, it's Rey. He's coming in next. And the whole crowd still booed him out of the building because he wasn't Daniel Bryan.
I would feel so sorry for Candice or Beth, because that would not be a good look. I don't want this to be a big tease on Friday and then it's them and the fans are like, we thought it was Becky Lynch. Like, set your expectations low. Do it now. Be prepared for the worst, because WWE can swerve you and they will make you think Candice is a big pick. Not really. She's very talented, but the splashier name is Becky Lynch, and she'll be a great compliment to that team. And in my perfect scenario, I would love to see Rhea Ripley pin Bianca Belair to get a set for WrestleMania. That would be my go-to match if it's not going to be Charlotte Flair.
Yeah, no, that would be awesome. Charlotte would be a little weird, I think, as a baby face. It just almost feels like, you know, she's just so much more comfortable being a heel these days.
Yes, I hope when she comes back, she reinvents herself again, so I can kind of see Charlotte Flair under the Triple H lens of how he wants her to be on the main roster as one of the greats to ever do it in the women's division, rightfully so. But I do want a wrinkle in the character besides a wardrobe switch up, which is nice, but I just want more character growth from Charlotte whenever she comes back to WWE.
All right, so the rest of the matches, at least what they have announced, I'm not happy that there's no traditional Survivor Series match on this card, at least as of yet. Ronda and Shotzi is, I think it's kind of DOA. I'm guessing, like, they didn't really have anything for Ronda because they're with Becky out, with Sasha out, with Charlotte out, with Naomi out. It's a little bit of slim pickings on the SmackDown side, so Shotzi kind of gets the shot here, but I would imagine this match is not going to be very long. You have the Seth Rollins, Bobby Lashley, Austin Theory match, which, you know, Seth Rollins is hot. Seth Rollins is maybe the best he's ever been. I don't know. People will probably say his wrestling was possibly better when he was younger, but from a character standpoint, he's on fire. Lashley's either, I can't tell if he's heel or babyface, but he gets cheered no matter what. And then we have Austin Theory, who may have committed the dumbest thing I've seen on TV in a long, long time. Unfortunate for him that they just had to get that briefcase off of him in the worst way humanly possible. You know that. You know when that happened. You know what I thought? I thought of that Spider-Man meme where Spider-Man is pointing at Spider-Man. And I was like, one of these is Vince and one of these is Triple H. Like, this is what's different about this scenario here?
It was both dumb. It was dumb. It was one of the dumbest cash-ins I've ever seen in my life on a secondary title, and it failed. It was an open challenge. Then they walked it back and say, well, Bobby technically took out Mustafa Ali, so therefore the open challenge was canceled, to make it not look as dumb. It was still stupid. Now, I will say that despite the stupidity of what happened, I am happy to admit that Austin Theory is growing on me as a heel that is surly, who's mean, who's a badass, and will actually get over as a character and a wrestler long term. This guy, if pushed properly, is money in 2 to 3 years.
You know what's going to happen, though, is if it takes him 2 to 3 years, the fans are going to get tired of this character just because, like, there's so much television. They're, like, he's on every Raw, and that is my fear, is when you kind of hold off because, you know, the guy's young and thus he can be beaten because he's not overexposed. That person becomes overexposed, and then, you know, all of your plans are kind of out the door because now nobody cares. And so that's my worry. Now, if there's a way to make him special, if there's a way to get him to a spot where, you know, and maybe it is a babyface turn at some point. Like, maybe this whole thing is like he's going to be heel for a year and then he's going to turn babyface and that's when we push him. Okay, I get that. But yeah, it's just, you know, some of this long-term booking sometimes, they don't understand the characters as well as they think they do. And the fans just kind of, you know, determine what happens for them. But I like Austin. I've liked Austin since NXT. You know, it's just in NXT, he was a little bit of like a dumber Matt Riddle, which you know, I didn't know if that could be possible, but he's done a pretty good job. You know, everything that they've had him do, I thought he's been, and maybe he's not an A+ at it, but, you know, he's a B, and that is a lot better than some of the other characters that Triple H has brought up. Like, I'd watch Austin Theory 10 times out of 10 times over like a Dexter Lumis, right? Or, you know, Johnny Gargano, who should be fresh, but man, this is like the worst babyface in the company right now. Like, to get me to root for the character of The Miz on a WWE show, like, should never happen. But yet, Johnny Gargano has me rooting for The Miz in all of these segments, which I didn't think was possible.
Never. I will never root for The Miz in any scenario. I will boo him regardless of how bad Johnny Wrestling is being presented right now on Monday Night Raw. I refuse. My co-host Scott will not have me eat crow and admit that The Miz is the wrong party in this situation. No way in hell am I doing it.
Yeah, Scott Young, Salty Scott, is a huge Miz fan. Like, I'm trying to think, who does Scott love more? Does he love The Miz more, or does he love LeBron more?
Don't let him fight over both of them, because you have like a case for both to say, I refuse to pick. They're both equally amazing. They're from Cleveland. They're champions. Mm-hmm. They're lovely people. They have beautiful families. He will refuse to pick them because that is how he wins at life, through them.
Yeah. It's been a rough year for Scott, though, when it comes to both The Miz and LeBron. Off years for them. So there can always be next year. Maybe not with the Lakers. I don't know what's going to happen to the Lakers. But all right. And then the last match is AJ versus Finn Balor. I kind of wonder, and I thought this at the Clash at the Castle show. Going into that show, I thought, I wonder if Triple H is going to try and steal AEW's thunder and have the best wrestling show of the day. And depending on who you talk to, some people thought Clash at the Castle was a better wrestling show than the AEW show. And there's an opportunity with this match on their last show of the year. If he lets them channel their inner New Japan, they could have like one of the best matches in WWE, I guess. PLE history is not that long, but pay-per-view / PLE history, if they let them have more of a New Japan kind of match. I'm intrigued to see if they ramp up the WWE style a little bit and make it sort of like how Gunther and Sheamus did on that show.
I would hope so. This is a great opportunity for AJ Styles and Finn Balor to ball out in a situation like this. Boston crowd is going to be hot, and I can sense them delivering. My only issue is I don't want a lick of interference in this
match.
That's
the problem. That's the problem.
I need everyone banned from ringside.
Yeah, because the whole thing is really about, you know, Dom and Rhea ringside, and now with Mia Yim with the OC. So you're 100% right, though there have been New Japan matches where the interference is kind of a big spot, and then you kind of, you just, it's there because it's there, it creates heat, and then you send them to the back and you let the guys finish the match. That could be okay, I think.
I don't trust Triple H.
All right, so I can't imagine that it's only going to be five matches. There's got to be something else that's coming. I don't even know what it could be, but if it's only the five matches, I think we're probably going to hit that 3 hour mark and not go too much over that, which I am totally fine with on a Saturday night there. All right, let's talk about this Dynamite show. It was from the Wintrust in Chicago, and I think a lot of people were wondering how heavy the CM Punk chants were. And I don't know if it was just me. I only heard them during the Elite stuff, which was I think that was predictable, and the Elite leaned into that. But I was actually, that was one of my kind of odd interests in this match, was how is Chicago, who had their hero, I guess he's been dumped. Like, we don't know yet exactly what happened. He's still hurt, but they don't mention him. They don't show him. The guys he was in the fight with, they were on this show. They've come back. They were making fun of him for heat. I was just wondering how Chicago was going to react. And I, with the exception of that match where they made the Elite heels, the Elite leaned into it. Other than that, I thought this was a fantastic crowd. Like, they were fired up. Good job, Chicago.
They were really hot. I will say there was like a pocket of a CM Punk chant at the very beginning of Dynamite when it came on the air and it was running through the card. But outside of that trios match, they were pretty hot all night long. They were raucous. They were fiery. And I have to say, they were kind of split down the middle. You had F CM Punk chants. You had CM Punk chants. You had F the Elite chants. It was a wide range of emotions during that matchup. And it kind of speaks to how polarizing CM Punk is right now, because it wasn't unanimous love and it wasn't unanimous hate either.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, this is we'll get to it when we talk about the Elite match. But Kenny Omega was trying to say, like, we just need to forget about all that stuff. It's not us against CM Punk. And then he had that match. So good job being a heel in that Kenny Omega. Okay, let's start at the beginning. We had William Regal out in the middle of the ring, and he says that MJF, you know, do you want to hear from MJF? Crowd is excited. How disappointed was this crowd when William Regal said MJF is not here? He's on his movie set. I don't remember if there was a statement or whatever saying MJF wasn't going to be here this week. But man, I would have loved to see him on this show. The champion who just beat Jon Moxley a few days ago, and he's not here. He's doing a movie about playing Lance Von Erich, of all people.
Hollywood MJF is here, and he big timed the crowd last night in Chicago. I know it was a movie commitment, but wow, that was something for him not to be here as a new champion to cut a promo. It'll be next week in Indianapolis. That's nice, but the Chicago crowd were kind of ripped off last night, and they let William Regal have it. And I can understand why, because let's go back to a year ago. This time a year ago, it was MJF and CM Punk having a shade cipher for 20 minutes, and look where we are now. Neither guy is there.
Yeah, and you know, MGF might have been too busy for this show, but he wasn't too busy tweeting against Conor McGregor and Patty the Batty from the UFC, saying that he's going to show up on December 10th, which is also the same day as the ROH pay-per-view, by the way, and the NXT show. So MGF's like, screw this wrestling stuff. I'm going to show up at the UFC show. So Regal, you know, Regal's being a heel, you know, MJF, he doesn't want to be in Chicago. And I guess that is par for the character of MJF, because like you said, he had the whole thing with Punk last year. And so who comes out? None other than Jon Moxley. So Moxley is fired up. He's got laser eyes for Regal, and Danielson sees this immediately, runs from the back, and slides into the ring, and he holds Moxley back, and he's saying, you know, come on, you know, calm down. Like, we've all done bad things. He says, he tells Mox not to do anything because Regal has a bad neck and has had some health issues in the past. And then Danielson slaps Moxie right in the face. Then he immediately says, I'm sorry. Like, I was like, okay, this is weird. And so then Danielson says that his dad had similar issues, similar struggles as Moxley, in reference to Moxley's stint for alcohol rehab. And Regal is the one who helped him understand. Regal has historically been very open about his problems in the past with that stuff. I'm watching John LaRocca and I are doing our 1998 Raw review, and there's a match with Regal. I forget who Regal's facing. And I was watching, and I'm like, this dude's messed up in the ring. And so I asked John, he's like, oh, I didn't really see it. And then we read the Observer that night from that show, and Meltzer, like, in his own code language, basically said what I was thinking, which was that Regal was kind of messed up in the ring. So everyone, you know, who knows his story knows that. So Danielson is using that to tell Moxley, just do not beat this guy up. Even though he did something very, very bad to you, he still does things that are good, or has in the past. And so he says, imagine someone having to teach your daughter how to love you amidst your own struggles. And Danielson says, save Regal. Now, the crowd is very mad at Bryan Danielson here. Bryan Danielson has become the heel even more so than William Regal in this segment. So Moxley grabs a microphone, gets nose to nose with Regal, and says he wants Regal to run far away as he can and never come back. And then, this was weird, he then says, now walk to the back. I was like, dude, you just told him to run. Now you want him to walk? I wonder if he's just like, as he's saying run far away, he's probably thinking like, yeah, this guy's probably not being able to run. Like, he, you know, I don't want him to actually run away from me. That's not the heel who he is. So Regal does walk away. And so we start off Dynamite with this really heated angle. The crowd is into it. Moxley gets screwed on the pay-per-view, and Regal is the foil. Bryan Danielson is right in between. And so we've got some conflict between the three of these men. What'd you think of this segment?
It was elevated by the crowd because they hated poor Bryan Danielson. How dare you prevent Moxley from kicking Regal's ass? How dare you be the peacemaker? I died when he got on his knees begging, please don't hurt him. Don't do it. He's been good to us. He's been good to me. I love this man. And these fans are booing, like, get your ass up. Stop begging. But I have to laugh at Moxley delivering word for word what Scar would say to Simba for the Lion King. Like, run. Don't ever look back. Don't ever come back. But then he realizes this guy can't run. So walk.
Yeah.
Walk. I'm going to give you the grace to walk slowly away from me before I kill you. And for that, I respect Moxley. But this segment was a lot of drama, which I liked, and the crowd elevated it because poor Bryan got it in the worst possible way.
Yes, yes. All right. So then we had Renee with Keith Lee. And as happens almost every backstage segment, she starts to interview him. And before he can barely get a syllable out of his mouth, he sees Swerve come into the picture. He tells Swerve to choose his words wisely. Swerve covers the camera with his hand, and so you can actually see through his fingers. And he says, let's talk, as if to say, without the camera here. And Keith Lee agrees to do that without the camera. So this segment was essentially what a commercial was supposed to be for, and I'll tell you why. The next segment was all comedy. We had this really serious segment with main event competitors, two of the most important people on the roster, super serious, heat, the crowd's so fired up, and this Keith Lee thing is kind of the 30-second commercial, because we're coming back – with Jake Hager in a bucket hat. And the idea of this match with Orange Cassidy is whoever can get the bucket hat kind of wins. It was like this, like, I think comedy has its place in wrestling. I'm not one of those guys who's like, oh, no comedy. But when you just have this fantastic opening segment, this is like if on The Wire and who's the... I haven't seen The Wire in a while, but the main bad guy from the first couple of seasons. You know what? Let's change, because I forgot the characters in The Wire. Let's change to Breaking Bad. Bryan Cranston's character, serious thing. He watches somebody die, or he kills somebody, and then the next segment is like a fart joke. Like, that's what this was on this television show. You had Jake Hager wearing a hat, Orange Cassidy trying to take the hat off of his head in a wrestling match, and it was just like, I don't know, like, what did I just watch? Because it made me feel like what I had just watched was now not that important, because this whole next segment was played for comedy.
It was a fever dream, and Jake Hager, noted MMA fighter, now cares more about a bucket hat than winning a match. And it was jarring to see. I love Orange Cassidy. I love his comedy. But to have two comedy figures going back and forth was a bit much for me. We had the Jericho Appreciation Society causing trouble as always, best friends as well. It was just a comedy hour segment that I didn't really like very much. And I love Orange, but Jake Hager is supposed to be this serious ass kicker, and he cares about a bucket hat more than winning the All-Atlantic Championship. And poor Daniel Garcia, subjected to this nonsense.
Yeah, he didn't even really put his all into it. He was just like, I'm kind of here, and I got to do one thing, and then I'm going to get out of here. But yeah, you know, again, I don't want it to seem like I'm just anti-goofy stuff, because, you know, one of my favorite characters in wrestling history was Mankind when he became a comedy character. But it has its place, and it has to be done well. And I don't think right after this great opening segment was the time to do it. Maybe a couple of segments after, you know, you kind of, you're coming down from that opening segment, and then you can do it. But yeah, you know, this is like, you know, Bunk and McNulty chasing Avon Barksdale, and then the next segment is like a fart joke. Like, I want to be gifted by getting sucked in. I don't want to be sort of made fun of by getting sucked in. It's like, I got sucked into that segment, and then they're like, ha ha ha, joke's on you. This is really what it's about, which is this gaga comedy. And I hate feeling that way. I'm probably taking this a little bit too seriously, but that's sometimes what bothers me about the way that Tony Khan puts his segments together. So in the end, after Orange Cassidy was playing keep away with the hat with 2.0, Cassidy had knocked the hat off and rolled him up to win the match. And then QT in the factory cut off what was about to become the hug spot for the best friends. So big heat on the cutting off of the hug spot. Though they did the exact same thing in the Scissor Me Daddy spot, where you had the heels cut it off by interrupting on the big screen. So QT comes out, poor QT. His mic goes out, which I think was purposeful. I think they did it because the crowd was, or the screen was about to go dark, because the House of Black was going to come up. They come out, they beat up the baby faces. The Factor's like, we're good, man. I think we'll be fine. Nope, then they get beat up too. And so the House of Black are back. Now, that segment ends in a serious way with a nice surprise. So overall, it was okay. What did you think about the House of Black coming back here?
I loved the beatdown of everybody. They just said, we hate everyone here, and we all are coming for you some way, somehow. I love the presentation. Buddy Matthews tackling that dude on the ramp was ugly, but I loved it. It was a nasty tackle. And I think that House of Black has the potential to be a hell of a crew if pushed properly. The fans love them, the presentations, everything, if the push goes along with it. This is a nice re-debut for them last night. I just want the push to match with the presentation because it's clearly there if they are given a fair shake.
Yeah, and you know, I swear, when Malachi Black came in, he was a big deal. I was like, okay, this guy's a pay-per-view main eventer. And then soon thereafter, he was just there. And I think they have to get him back to that level. I think that would be really good for him to get back to the level where people really believe in him, you know?
He's great. And I thought when he beat Cody those three times, like, there we go. He's on the way. And then it just didn't click for whatever reason. Even when he got a crew, it just never clicked past certain level. I'm hoping that this go around is a bit better. Everybody's refreshed. They're back and ready to go. And it's very interesting how we have Judgment Day and WWE and House of Black kind of reset. And they're not the Wish version of each other anymore. They're kind of level at this point, which is nice to see.
Yeah, they're both good, and I like that Judgment Day has kind of become a little bit more they've developed the characters a little more. When you have like a Dom Mysterio there who's, you know, the whiny kid and all he does is repeat the things that the tough guys say, and then this is a little darker. It's a little bit more fantasy here with the House of Black, the heavy video packages, so they are different, and I do like that. All right, then we got the Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus video package. This is all we saw of Jungle Boy on this show, which I thought was a little bit of a bummer because, to me, his match at Full Gear was really the coming out party for the adult version of one Jack Perry. I thought the match and the post-show press conference stuff was really impressive by him, and it was kind of like, you're like, oh, yeah. This dude's not like 18, like he's an adult now and he should be doing more of an adult character. But what did you think about the Jungle Boy stuff from the pay-per-view?
I loved it. It was a love note to Shawn Michaels' Hell in a Cell match 20 something years ago. You can tell he was inspired by it. I think he talked to Mick Foley about the layout of the match years ago for this matchup this past Saturday. So I really dug his performance against Luchasaurus. I thought that was probably one of his best singles matches to date. And he showed up big. I love the Scrum interview, channeling someone from Chicago with the blood and the muffins, which I appreciate it. Love the inside humor there. Yeah. And I liked the backstage promo last night, basically detailing how he won the match. And I think this is his next step. I think he is one of the first pillars that is going to move to that next level. He's just not going to be like a building block that has some success. I think he's ready to reach that next level towards winning his first major singles championship in AEW very soon.
But Keela, Kenny Omega said, it's not about CM Punk. The fans, have to get over it. We have to get over it. Okay, Ethan Page against Ricky Stark. So this is the tournament finale for the Winter is Coming championship title shot. Ethan Page, his new gimmick is to walk to the ring while cutting his promo. He doesn't stop. He just like kind of, you ever see the power walkers? There's like walking is a sport.
And
that's how Ethan Page has to cut his promo while walking that fast to the ring. And so he does his promo. Stokely does his promo. Ricky Stark is all taped up. So you watch NXT, and I know that you were a fan of one Malcolm Bivens in NXT, as was myself. I thought he was my favorite part almost every show. Him and who's Carmelo Hayes' second?
Trick Daddy Williams.
Trick Daddy Williams. Those two were my favorite parts of NXT outside of the in-ring stuff. He was so much better in NXT. Why?
I have no idea. I just think that he's out of place in AEW. The material doesn't hit the same. I miss Biv with the Creed brothers and Diamond Mine and him going off on Trick. That was him in his wheelhouse. And I felt like he was more naturally himself versus whatever he's doing in AEW. And he's had so many roles. He was Jay Cargill's manager. He left. He has a firm and it's not really a firm. He was MJF's best friend and they're not anymore. He just had so many roles in AEW that it's not even a solid foundation for him to really be a manager that I can get behind, because his promos are his strong suit. And I haven't been wowed by a promo of his in a long time since My Sisters in Christ, when he was recruiting baddies for Jay Cargill. That was the last time I popped at a Malcolm Bivens joke besides him and Malachi bonding over Living Single.
Yes. He cut a promo here, but it just made me think like, man, I used to really love this guy. He has not hit yet in AEW. Okay, so this match was Starks mostly selling the shoulder, the arm, the chest, the ribs, everything. This dude is just beat up. But he still does his dive out, and Stokely pushes Page out of the way, and he crashes and burns, and then the referee throws Stokely out. So Stokely's no longer ringside. Starks hits a superplex that I wasn't sure he was actually going to get. He set it up, and I think it was like one of those things where, you know, if you're talking to Paige, you're like, okay, one, two, three, or whatever they use to help with the timing. And I think Starks went on like 1.5 or something, and it was a little early, but they got it. Then Paige missed the Ego's Edge. Starks had slipped out. Starks rolls him up for two, hits a spear, then hits another spear, which would have been the third one for the match, and he wins. And a lot of the fan base had a collective applause for Ricky Starks winning, because there was a little bit of like a, oh, they're just building this whole tournament so Ethan Page can finally get in the main event picture. Oh, this is going to be predictable and boring, and I don't like Ethan Page. And so that part of the fan base, they were very happy because Ricky Starks won. And who doesn't like Ricky Starks? Ricky Starks is great. He's underrated. He's underappreciated. He takes a lot of time off, which I'm assuming is injury related. But Tony Khan doesn't like to be that transparent, so we're not 100% sure. But Ricky Starks gets MJF at Winter is Coming. What do you think about this match?
I liked it. I saw Ricky Starks. I'm like, oh my God, he's a mummy. He's wrapped up. He can't really do a lot, but he's a great seller. He fought valiantly, won the match with two spears. I was worried about the superplex as well, but he made it through somehow, some way. But I'm really excited about MJF versus Ricky Starks for the promos alone. I need them to just go off on each other on the mic 2 weeks before Winter is Coming to sell me on this match, because we know they can go in the ring. This has the potential to be one of the best television matches of the year, if given time. Both guys are good on the microphone, and I just want them to go in. I can close my eyes right now and envision Rock Austin, WrestleMania 17. It's not going to be that exactly, but in my head, in terms of material and promo, maybe, perhaps, scratching the surface.
And they're both young. They're both guys who have been here almost from the beginning. Starks, I don't think Starks was exactly here at the beginning, but you know, I think the fan base, the hardcore fan base, is really intrigued here for both these. You know, when you said he was the mummy, you know, it reminded me of, and this is a reference that not that many people are even gonna know that's coming. I went to a UFC show in 2008, and you know the famous Rock GIF where he's in the crowd clapping, like he's like, oh, like it looks like he's like in the crowd, like watching like Broadway performance or something, but he was really just watching a UFC show. You know who else was at that UFC show dressed as a mummy? Was none other than Michael Jackson.
I remember that.
And that's what I just, for whatever reason, when you said the mummy, I was like, oh yeah, like Michael Jackson when I was at that UFC show. And you know, this was, what's sad is I think he only died like a year later. That's the saddest part. All right, we got a Wardlow video package, and he did the single worst catchphrase in the history of catchphrases about it being Wardlow's world. And as I've stated before, he needs to start it with la 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 la, la 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 la, Wardlow's world. Like, just lean into it, dude. Like, it's already the worst. Like, at least make it fun. But yeah, he said that, you know, Joe hit him from behind, and Joe is not the most dangerous man. He's the most dangerous man. So I'm wondering if we get something with these two guys at the ROH show, if they're going to do it before then.
it's a definite possibility. They can do it at Ring of Honor. They could do it at Winter is Coming. That's a nice way to cap off the year for Wardlow. My preferred nickname is Wardlow the God, not this Wardlow's World crap, which I love Wardlow, but that catchphrase sucks with all due respect to him and his beautiful ponytail.
So that I want to get your perspective here, because I've seen a little bit of this on Twitter, and I like there's a lot of really smart wrestling fans who are also women on Twitter, and so I've been following a lot, because not to say that for women that it's like sort of embarrassing to be a wrestling fan, but I know like when I was in radio, like it was, I would not tell like other people in radio, oh yeah, I also watch wrestling. There's kind of a thing to it. But I like the fact that there are so many more women wrestling fans out there that I can see their thoughts and their views. And one thing seems to be consistent about from them that I see in Twitter is that, is Wardlow the hottie right now? Like, who's the guy who the women, a lot of the women think is like, you know, they can't wait for this guy? Because I've seen a lot of stuff about Wardlow being the new hottie for some of the fans.
Wardlow is definitely a thirst trap. There's something about him that just stands out in a very charismatic and sexy way. And I think it kind of goes back to when MJF was whipping him and he no-sold it. And everybody thought, well, let's see what we can do here with our whips and chains. I think that's when the imaginations started to run wild, because he no-sold the whipping. So I just think he has a level of charisma that exudes sexuality, and he leans into it, and he knows it too, yeah, which is very smart of him. So that's why I think ladies are kind of free to say, Wardlow's hot. He is. I just hate that catchphrase.
Yeah, the catchphrase sucks. I thought it was going to be when Paige Van Zandt was there, and he just like flexed his pecs like right in front of her boyfriend, or is it her husband? Maybe her husband. I thought that was going to be it, but I don't know that may, the pec popping may not be all that attractive now that I think about it. Okay, I couldn't wait for this segment because I have a little quiz for you. Jade Cargill confronts Bow Wow at his concert, and they were teasing this on social media. It was like 10 seconds long. Like, there was nothing to it. All they did, they just looked like fans who got taken away by security. That's what it looked like. I don't know if it was supposed to look like that, but it looked like he was the giant star and they were fans who were being aggressive and they got taken away. Is that what you saw, or am I seeing something else?
That's what I saw, because it should have been the other way around. Bow Wow shows up at full gear and he gets kicked out. Not you appear at the concert and you get kicked out. You're the baddies. How are you ejected from your own scene? But I digress.
Exactly. That's what I thought too. Okay. So Renee is with Jade and the baddies. Jade says she doesn't want to give any clout to that whack ass rapper. And at some point we see Red Velvet. Where has Red Velvet been? I feel like she's been gone for a little bit.
She was injured and she just came back this week, I believe.
And so I guess they thought, now that they have Layla, maybe Kira doesn't fit, because Mark Sterling had Kira sign a contract that basically said, you are no longer on the baddies. And I was like, why are you signing this thing? Did you read the contract?
Mark Sterling is an ambulance chaser professional, and he knows how to get people to sign things unknowingly.
All right. Now here's your quiz. Bow Wow trivia. I want to know how much you know about the man who used to be Lil Bow Wow, but is now just Bow Wow. Okay. What is Bow Wow's real name?
I know it's Shad something.
Shad Moss. You're going to get full credit just for knowing the first part of his name.
Okay.
Do you know what Bow Wow's original rap name was when he was 6 years old?
Oh, God. I have no idea.
It was Kid Gangsta. Can you imagine his mom was just like, yeah, you could be Kid Gangsta. You're six. If you were five, you know, you couldn't be Kid Gangsta, but you're six now. Okay. I gave this answer on We're Live, Pal, but I'll give this question. Who gave young Shad Moss the Little Bow Wow nickname?
Snoop Dogg.
Snoop Dogg. I knew you were going to get that one. It was at a concert. He just showed up at a concert and was on stage with Snoop, and Snoop just called him Lil Bow Wow. Okay. In his words, why did he drop the Lil from the Bow Wow?
I'm going to say because he was grown now.
That is part of it, but I think it was the rise of the other Lils. Like, he just thought there were too many Lils.
Oh, Lil Romeo.
Lil Romeo. Now, Lil Baby. All these other ones. You know, Lil Kim obviously was probably the best one out of all of them. Okay. Did you know that Bow Wow was on The Masked Singer?
I did not.
Okay, so then you're not going to know who he was. He was the frog on The Masked Singer. One Chris Jericho was just also on The Masked Singer. Okay, a couple more here. Bow Wow has been in a handful of movies. Name one, and it can't be Like Mike.
I was so going to go there. Oh, my God. Let me think. Oh, God. I want to say Roll Bounce, but I might be wrong.
You got it. Holy cow.
Yes.
That was an amazing pull there. I think the one that most people will remember is Tokyo Drift. I think it's the second Fast and Furious, because he came back in F9, Fast and Furious 9, to kind of, they were kind of tying some old stories together. So good job. I would have also accepted the 5-episode Entourage on HBO. He was on there for 5 episodes. Okay, last one. This is the best one. This wasn't that long ago. It was only 5 years ago. What was the Bow Wow challenge on social media?
Oh, him in that fake ass plane he didn't have?
Exactly.
Him in the fake jet.
So he took a photo in front of a jet as if to say that he was getting on this private jet to go wherever he was. And as it turned out, someone played a little Sherlock Holmes and found that it was a stock photo that he used. And so then on social media, everyone tried to basically do their Bow Wow, put themselves in front of these stock photos of rich stuff. So there you go. All right. You did pretty good. I like it. You have some pretty good Bow Wow knowledge there. All right. As we move on, this is the John LaRocca Invitational. The Elite versus the Death Triangle. And as the listeners of this podcast know, that if John was here, he would have maybe groaned as I made the mention of the match. But John is not here, so we can give this match different eyes. We don't have to look at it through the lens of John LaRocca. So I took a couple notes here, and one of them was, this new music that they're, well, not new, this music gives them life, man. Like, they are really into this song. It's way better than the Goofy Being the Elite song, which is like somebody made on their keyboard. But man, this, you know, this is a real song. People know the song. It's not quite Judas in that people are like singing it down to the ring, but I think that is eventually going to happen. But man, this music is so great for them. So very early on, there was a CM Punk chant, and the Elite immediately leaned into it. They're healing it up. This is through the John LaRocca lens here, but they overdo it so that it's kind of fake, and I wish they would pull back just a little bit. But the problem is, and the reason they don't, is because the crowd, live crowd, eats it up. For the match's sake and for their opponent's sake, I wish they'd pull it back just a little bit. They showed Penta with George Kittle in Mexico City at the 49ers game, which was a great game. 49ers beat the bumps off of the Cardinals, and Penta was there, especially after he was very happy because George Kittle scored 2 touchdowns in that game. That is George Kittle's favorite wrestler, and so they showed that on the broadcast. So Pac had a broken nose. He's wearing a face mask. A match started with Omega Mad at Phoenix, and he's pantomiming being hit in the head with a hammer. And my immediate thought was, oh, yeah, you got hit with a hammer, and you're fine. could you have a bandit, some sort of bandage around your head? But nope, he was just pantomiming, and you know, they were being a little silly about it. And start of the match, it was really cool because there was a bit of a World Cup atmosphere to start the match. You saw that there was a Mexican flag out in the crowd in the front row, and the fans were very into it. Even when it got silly, and it did, and it got sloppy in some instances, I still think Phoenix missed a super kick by about 5 feet, like not even close, and they had to sell it. Kenny did the biting thing to throw back to Ace Steel. I think he bit Pac's arm. Pac's face mask was taken off. They hit the trigger on him. Then Omega hits a GTS on Pac for a two count. And Keely, he said, and I have the quote from Sports Illustrated, "This isn't Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks against CM Punk. It is people trying to show off their craft. You can boo Kenny Omega or the Young Bucks or CM Punk, but I hope people don't forget we're human beings struggling to show our art." I'm assuming he was working, but man, so another sort of sloppy spot here, and again, this is through the John LaRocca lens because he would have definitely pointed this out. So the end of this match is that Brandon Cutler is going to give Matt Jackson the hammer. I don't think we're supposed to know that Cutler has it, but he pulls it out like 5 seconds too early. So he pulls it out and I go, oh, he's got the hammer. And he's trying to give it to Matt. Matt's going into the ring to set up the spot so that Brandon Cutler can unveil it to the camera and give it to him. But unfortunately, Brandon Cutler has already spoiled the finish here. Gives Matt the hammer, and then Penta also has a hammer, hits Matt in the head, and the Death Triangle go up 2-0. And I wanted, now this would have been great, but someone who had to have been thinking on their feet, I wanted them to create a stat that said something of the effect, the team that goes up 2-0 in a best of seven series wins the series 75% of the time. Because that's what they would do in the NBA.
Yes.
Oh, I wanted someone to do that, but they didn't, you know, they didn't, they couldn't. But okay, I gave the nuts and bolts. This was entertaining. It was fun. What were your thoughts?
I was highly entertained. This crowd was incredible. I agree with you with the World Cup atmosphere. They were lively. I wish I was there just for the atmosphere alone.
Oh, yeah.
They were hyped, and that made me hyped for this match. And this match was the shadiest. It was the most disrespectful. It was the rudest slap in the face to a person I've ever seen. Matt Jackson, he deliberately butchered and botched that buckshot lariat and
fell
sat
right
down.
On his ass.
It was incredible. Kenny biting Pac, because you said this is healing for you, that we are not beefing with someone, but let me bite the arm of someone that bit me 2 months ago. We have Matt praying like Punk before doing a moonsault. We have Kenny hitting the GTS to add insult to injury. This was just so egregious and rude, but I loved it because they leaned into being assholes. And I respect that. They knew the game. You're in Chicago. You're going to get booed. But like we said at the top of the show, it wasn't unanimous hate. You got pockets of F the Elite, F CM Punk, go CM Punk.
Yes.
So it was very split down the middle. So I like the atmosphere of them not being completely hated, but you can still feel the hate. But the body of the match was really good. Ray was off in a couple of spots, but he's always spectacular. And the Young Bucks are going to do what they do best, which is fly around, super kick, and be assholes in the best possible way. I loved it for the shade alone. I'm sure someone in Chicago was not very happy with this tribute match, but I don't care because I loved it.
Okay, but here's a flip side to this. What they made me think was that he's coming back. That's what it made me think when they were doing all of this stuff. And I'm not, I mean, maybe he's not coming back. And I would sort of lean towards that possibility. But man, it sure did make me believe that in 8 months, this dude is coming back and the Elite are going to get theirs. Like, that's what it made me think. But that's just from the history of sort of watching wrestling. Maybe this is different, but I don't know. Did you get that feeling at all?
I felt like there's unfinished business. That's a contract that's worth a lot of money you're trying to buy out of, and you don't want to gift wrap him to WWE whatsoever. That's like something that I wouldn't do if I'm Tony Khan. So there's money to be made. I'm going to try to make a deal. But at the same time, I think the backstage atmosphere is still a bit iffy. There are people that don't like CM Punk and they don't want him back. And I don't know if it's going to be enough to do a work shoot situation, but it felt like it wasn't over. But knowing the Elite, this is just shade, and they do it very well. And I would love to see them find a way to work through this, because I don't want that lasting image to be of Punk being pissed off at that press conference and then have the fight backstage. I don't want that to be his lasting memory. I want him to come back either for AEW or WWE and to have a palate cleanser to kind of remove the stench of that moment. But you never know in wrestling. We've had a crazy year, unforgettable with news and headlines. 2023 could provide that as well, depending on how this goes with CM Punk and Tony Khan's contract situation.
All right. Renee said that AEW and Thunder Rosa have reached an agreement. Rosa has relinquished her championship and makes me wonder if she's going to be back at all. I haven't heard anything, but just the way that that happened, you know, if I'm Thunder Rosa, I go, but wait, like CM Punk got to be out for a whole show. And, but I don't know what, whatever, like Tony did. Tony, when asked about it, he didn't, there wasn't this resounding like, oh, Thunder Rosa is going to be back better than ever. You just watch. Like, it was a little more safe than that. So she relinquishes her title. So the interim champion, Jamie Hayter, is now the world champion. And as she starts to do her interview, Britt cuts her off and does her spiel and is sort of speaking for her. So they're creating the heat for them, which I love. I love this angle. I love Jamie. Britt is not in the ring. She is not at the level that they probably want her to be. But man, as a character, she's fantastic. I enjoy watching her cut interviews, and I could do so all day long. All right, so we got this match. And when I saw the graphic for this match, I thought, oh my dear, somebody is going to get hurt. It was Jamie Hayter and Britt versus Tay Mello and Anna Jay versus Sky Blue and Willow Nightingale in a triple threat tag team match, which essentially just means like no rules. And I will say there were moments. This match did have its moments, like Tay Mello getting to the apron a bit late to trip Willow to Sky Blue. She kind of just moves like a robot when she's in the ring. Like it's almost like when you're counting steps, like when you have to count your steps for something, like someone's going to do the long jump and they're counting their steps. That's what it looks like she's doing in the ring. Anna Jay was sitting in the corner kind of with a hand over her face for what seemed like a half an hour just to run at whomever with her hands down to get clothesline. But I will say there was star power in there with Britt and Jamie. It is a great act. I will give Sky credit for hitting the one code blue that she's been really good at hitting of late. And Willow, I really like Willow. I think she is somebody who is going to be in the big picture for the women's division next year. I think she's going to be in the mix. So late in the match, Jamie Hayter hits her backbreaker, which is great. And then Britt hits the ropes. This was weird because I think what was supposed to happen is Willow was supposed to go and either get to the apron or maybe try and trip Britt, and Rebel was supposed to stop her. But Rebel was watching, and so she was like, whoops, I forgot, and then went over at the last second and then had to intercept Willow didn't look great, but it was fine. And then Britt hits the curb stomp for the win. Not the best match, but I thought because of Jamie and Britt, it still had the all eyes were on them, and that's what this match was really about.
Agreed. I'm always glued to Britt and Jamie Hayter. I love their partnership, and their feud very soon is going to be great. Honestly, I would have probably chopped Ty Mello and Anna Jay from this match and would have had it with Willow Nightingale and Sky Blue instead. And Sky Blue has a ways to go. I like what she has in terms of potential, but she's very mechanical, thinking about the steps a bit too much for me. And I got to keep it real. Every time I see her, I think about Cora Jade and Roxanne yeah, Perez, exactly. And they're all so interchangeable. And I just want them all to find their own identities and lanes and looks and identities. That's all. Otherwise, I like what she can be someday.
All right. FTR, Top Flight. They did an interview with Renee. Dax said that Top Flight impresses him and he wants them to take over tag team wrestling for the next 3 decades. These dudes are not going to be high flying when they're 50 years old, my guy. They are not. Darius and Dante said that they want a title shot for the ROH straps on Rampage. I didn't look at the spoilers. I feel like, not that there's going to be more viewers on Rampage because it's Friday, but a lot of people have the day off. So they may tune in, and I kind of want to watch Rampage live without knowing what's going to happen, though. I know I'm going to forget when Wrestling Observer Radio comes on and they talk about the spoilers. Then I'm going to forget to hit the skip button and it's going to be spoiled anyways. But Rampage is on at a funky time. So for you, it's on at 4. And for me, it's on at 1 p.m. What the heck? There's going to be soap operas on and Rampage is going to be on at the same time. Like, I don't, this one's going to be tough. And I think it's because TNT has college football, right?
Or hockey.
Oh, no, you're right. It's hockey. Duh. Mm-hmm. That was dumb. Yeah, hockey. They have hockey all day. So, all right. The Acclaimed came out and, you know, we've had some rapper gimmicks in wrestling history. There was, I go back to PN News in WCW in 1991, who was a horrendous rapper. We had Men on a Mission in WWF around, 94. Obviously, we've had John Cena. We've had one R-Truth, who can actually rap, though. Where do you put Max Caster in the mix here of pro wrestling rappers?
If you asked me this question a year ago, I would have buried him. But I will say that his bars have gotten better in the last year. And I find him very endearing as a character and a performer. Now, I will say this. Ironically enough, he can't rap a cappella.
No.
He needs a beat. I learned that during the rap battle with the Gun Brothers a couple of months ago, and that this dude needs a beat to really get on beat. And I was surprised by that. So that's his one drawback as a rapper. But otherwise, I'm entertained. Some lines land better than others, but I find Max Caster endearing, and I cannot find myself saying that sentence a year ago.
Yeah, it's interesting because the way that he raps on this show is he has a very simplistic style because it's just a punchline. He's just first line, and then second line is the punchline. And when you do rap a cappella, or maybe you're in a cypher or something, your lines are building up in a different way. So I'm sure it's way harder to do it that way. And you know, you see the really good freestylers are amazing at it. But yeah, that's got to be super hard. When him and John Cena, they can just kind of write their rhymes and they measure them and then they just come out in their punchlines. So yeah, I enjoy him. Again, he and Bowens, you know, being sort of the guys who've been here for a long time, it is endearing that they're doing well. Like, I really enjoy them. I almost thought in this segment, like, if somebody told me backstage Billy Gunn had 3.5 beers, I would go, I could see that, because he was kind of on one. he comes out, and obviously the Scissor Me Daddy chant starts, which is it happened at All Out, which was also in Chicago. And so Billy Gunn was just digging it. He had his hat turned like to the side, really like goofy looking. I'm like, who told you to do that? Because like, don't do that ever again. You're a 59-year-old man. He took off the little wrap on his hand, and it's a lot better. So they were going to do the triple scissor. And right as they were going to do it, just like in the best friend's hug, they got interrupted. I would maybe not repeat those spots on the same show. Sanjay Dutt and company did not allow it to happen. Jeff Jarrett's there. Satnam Singh is there. Jay Lethal is there. One of Max's lines had to do with Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett. He used the slap nuts phrase. And so Jarrett was pissed off, of course, because that's all he is. He can only ever be pissed off. There's never a happy Jeff Jarrett. There's only a don't piss me off Jeff Jarrett in this world today. So Billy Gunn says, I think this is what he said, because some of the stuff, again, his lines were a little off tonight. He said, get that old ass off the screen. Is that what you heard too?
Yes.
Okay. Jeff Jarrett is 4 years younger than Billy Gunn, for one. For two, at least Jeff Jarrett is playing an older version of himself from when he was a younger wrestler. Like, it's sort of like he's aged his character. And Billy Gunn is basically doing 1998 PG-13 version of D-Generation X. So I would be careful, Billy Gunn. That could turn against you at some point. And then they did the three-way scissor. What do you think about where they're going to go next? The tag team titles, they're going to be wrestling a lot, and they're going to be defending them. And I don't know if Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal are the team that I necessarily want to see them wrestle. I'm not sure why we're not back with the Ass Boys. I'm sure we're going to save the FTR stuff for down the line. But what do you think about the Acclaimed, and what do you think about their run so far?
I like their run, but we need some credible tag teams, because we know the money eventually is going to be with FTR, but they might be wading into Revolution, and that's a long ways away. And I just want some comparable tag teams up against them. And this used to be AEW strong suit, strong tag teams vying for these titles. We got to get back to that. I know they're kind of leaning back against the rankings, which never meant anything for a very long time. But I think it's very important to give the Acclaimed great opponents to work with to really make this reign stand out. Because ultimately, I do sense FTR winning these titles to get all four if they hold on to the three between now and Wrestle Kingdom and whatever AAA show is coming up next as well.
All right. So I was very happy to see Excalibur doing his Micro Machines impression again with the lineup. The one show that he didn't do it, I was very sad that he didn't do it. This was like 2 weeks ago. I think they were showing the graphics on the screen. So Lunchtime with Rampage is going to have FTR against Top Flight, Darby against Anthony Henry. There's going to be a Jericho interview. And I'm like, isn't this dude on every single Rampage? Like, Do we have to broadcast that? Or how about let's just not have him do commentary, and so then he can show up on the show and it doesn't feel weird. Sheeta is going to be in action. And the Butcher, Blade, and Roosh face the Dark Order. I still hearken back to the time not too long ago when Tony Khan said, we're going to improve this show and it's going to go back to being an A show. I have not seen that. Jun Nakayama and Takeshita against Kingston and Ortiz was fun. Not necessarily like this giant draw as seen by the TV ratings, but I don't know. Don't you need like a, can't you save a main event? Like, okay, Jungle Boy didn't show up. Why? He should be wrestling on this show. Like, who's not on Dynamite who can actually be someone? I don't know. I'm not excited about these Rampage shows. But then again, with it being at 1 o'clock, I really don't have an excuse to not watch it, right?
Listen, 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock for me. Thankfully, GH is a repeat.
Yes.
Or it's college football all day long on ABC. It's not a conflict. I can watch it. I can work earlier when SmackDown is off the air at 10 o'clock. It's an early night for me, but it's very telling that the best seven series between the Bucks, Omega, and the Death Triangle, not a single one of those matches are on a Rampage.
Nope. Not at all.
You would think that would be a match that could draw maybe 500,000 viewers on a Friday night, but no.
Dynamite is going to have the third match with the Death Triangle against the Elite. Man, if they go up 3-0, that's going to be tough. I just don't want them to go 3-1, because then I'm going to have to hear Salty Scott with this 3-1 2016 finals jokes. I don't want to hear it, so let's not make this 3-1. Let's go 2-2. All right, MJF will be in the building, and they're going to announce more matches on Rampage. Okay, we get to the main event. Jericho and Ishii was really fun. Jericho mostly wrestled Ishii's style of match. Like, this was not a Chris Jericho match until the end. This was all chops and strong style, striking. So much so that Jericho's chest started bleeding in this match. Like, the chop just took some skin off, I guess, on Jericho. There was a scary moment, though. When I saw it in replay, it didn't look as scary. Jericho had Ishii on the outside of the apron, the side of the apron, and does a DDT. And, you know, you take the DDT and you thought, okay, maybe he's going to hit flat and he'll just stay on the side of the apron. He takes the DDT and he just keeps falling all the way down to the outside. So that was... that was crazy, but you know, the guy's brilliant, so I'm sure he was fine. Both guys go to the floor. Back in the ring, Ishii gets out of the Walls of Jericho, hits a code breaker, and then hits a lariat for a two count. Finally, Jericho gets on the walls, and then he turns it into the Lion Tamer style, and wins the match, and he gets Ishii to tap. And in the worst feud in AEW, Chris Jericho against Ian Riccaboni, he walks like two steps towards Riccaboni, and then Claudio shows up and punches him right in the face and knocks him out to end the show. What'd you think about this main event?
I thought it was really good. Crowd came to life once again. She is amazing. And the bloody chest of Chris Jericho freaked me out. I did not expect to see him that bloody and bruised. So, Gunther, I need you to step up your game now, because if we're producing blood, I need you to chop souls and blood out of people's chests now, because that was a visual I did not expect. I liked how Jericho worked Ishii's style. He didn't try to do his style of match. It was very physical, very strong style, very violent in a lot of spots, and the crowd loved it. I was biting a couple of those near falls from Ishii. That lariat had me for a moment, but the outcome was never in doubt. I did love Ishii flipping off Jericho before tapping out. Like, no, I'm not going down that easily, but I'm still going to tap.
Yes, it was good stuff. Good stuff. I know a lot of people kind of get tired of that same style of match that Ishii has in the U.S., but it worked. I thought it absolutely worked. Jericho made sure it was going to work, and really good match to end the show. All right, so you don't only do the rap with Salt Bae Scott Young. You also do other content, and go ahead and why don't you tell the people where they can find you and where they can hear some of your other stuff.
All right. So besides the rap that I do with Scott Young every Monday morning and or Sunday for PLEs on the Fight Game Media Network, I have my own podcast hub called Wrestleptopia that covers Raw, SmackDown, NXT, Dynamite, and Rampage that drops every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. And starting in a couple of weeks, I'll be doing my first ever spinoff show dedicated to General Hospital, my main show. And I'm very excited about this. It's playing into my fandom before wrestling years ago. And it's going to be a centralized show about a couple named Sprina from General Hospital, a very popular couple that's blown up on social media over the last couple of years or so. And it's going to be a wind down weekly discussion every Monday morning, dishing on all things GH with that couple in particular. And you can find me wherever you listen to your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever. I'm everywhere. You can follow me on social media at Lady Wrestling X on Twitter. I'm always active on there, tweeting about wrestling and GH most of the time. So a lot of fun times on my timeline as of late. And I have loved popping Scott every week with my GH trivia knowledge, because it's what we do on the wrap.
Yes. And since Survivor Series is on Saturday, you all will be up a day early with your Survivor Series recap. And, you know, I've said this to people who have, you know, when they're looking for podcasts and stuff, I said, you know what? Keela is up there with the best podcast hosts that I have heard. Not only is it voice, because you have a very strong voice and a very soothing voice at the same time, but it is your ability to set up your co-host and still get your own opinions out there at the same time, because that can be really hard. We're going a little inside podcasting here, though, for a second. But when you are a host, your goal is to set up your co-host so that they just hit home runs after home runs after home runs. But at the same time, you have to get your own thoughts and analysis in, and that's one thing that you do really well. You also do a three-person show every other week, it seems, with the wrap, and that is the hardest thing to do for me, is to set up two people and then have enough space to then say the things that I think as well. So kudos to you. You guys crack me up. Whenever I'm editing the show, I'm like listening to certain pieces, because I know there's going to be some jokes early on about Scott and how he answers you. Great chemistry that the both of you have. So good job on that. And yeah, like Keela said, she does other stuff as well. If you want to listen to her more, check her out. And I'll add her to the notes on the post on WrestlingObserver.com. So thank you, Keela, for chipping in here. You will be on this show many more times in the future, but I do appreciate you coming on Thanksgiving show for John. So I hope everyone has a good Thanksgiving. Throw us on when you take your post-meal walk so that you can eat again. And so for Keela, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.